Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On January 31st, KALW is holding a youth empowerment summit called Power the Future. It will welcome Bay Area youth ages 14 to 22 for an afternoon of political discussions and what they are doing to make change at the local level. Doors open at 11 a.m. It is free and open to any young person who registers online. According to the United Way, 51% of Gen Zers have attended a rally or a protest, 32% of Gen Zers and 40% of Gen Z college students are regularly involved in activism and social justice work. Today, we are joined by two young activists who are involved with KALW's event on January 31st. Renzaro Fitzgerald is a 21-year-old community advocate based in the Bay Area. Organizing since they were 15, Ren has led winning local, state, and federal campaigns across the country and mentored aspiring young advocates. Ren has done social media and outreach work with BART, Gen Z for Change, and Berkeley's Transportation Commission, which they currently chair. Ren is an undergrad student at UC Berkeley, majoring in urban studies and journalism. Hi, Ren. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be on.
It's great to have you. Zanvi Arora is founder and executive director of the Youth Power Project, an organization that empowers young people to turn their experiences into solutions through storytelling, education, and youth-led policy design. Since starting this work at 15, Zanvi has helped to pass over a dozen state and federal laws on mental health, education, tech accountability, and student rights. Zanvi is an undergrad at UC Berkeley, completing bachelor's degrees in computer science and legal studies with a minor in public policy. Hi, Zanvi. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. It's an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have both of you. Thank you so much for joining us. You have done so many incredible things through your activism work. I'd love to just find out how you both got involved at such a young age. Ren, let's start off with you. You have been doing organizing since you were 15. How did you get involved?
Yes, that's correct. My first campaign I ever volunteered on was for a city council member in my hometown of San Mateo when I was 15 years old. It was during COVID. And frankly, I was looking for community. I was looking for people to talk to, people my age, people who I could connect with virtually. And when I saw an opportunity to phone bank for a council member, I had no idea what phone banking was. But I realized that I was pretty good at it. And I liked being able to connect with people. And obviously, we've been able to return to having physical forums to connect with one another. But the reasoning for my advocacy has never been, it's never changed. It's always been to find community, to meet both like-minded and differently minded people who I can connect with and find common ground with.
And since then, you have done so many incredible things. You have worked on communication strategies, advocacy. You previously led growth messaging and outreach strategy for Instagram and Twitter at Gen Z for Change. You grew the nonprofit's audience of 200,000 plus followers while collaborating with Robert Reich, More Perfect Union, the Amazon Labor Union. This is really amazing, Ren. And given that so many young people get their news and information from social media, it's just so important to be working in that space. So can you tell us how you went from phone banking to doing advocacy and communications around social media?
Absolutely. And it's been such an honor to be able to work with so many on the ground advocates across the country. Like you mentioned, the Amazon Labor Union was always a highlight. Former Secretary of Labor, Robert Reich, More Perfect Union. It's always been such an honor to get to work with the people who are doing the on the ground organizing. And really, my role has just been to amplify the work that they are doing in their communities. I've always really gravitated towards advocacy and towards a sense of doing what is right and really standing up when something is wrong. And there were just so many opportunities. And I think what's really changed for Gen Z as opposed to previous generations is that We've had so many opportunities to get involved, and there's certainly still shortfalls, but at every step of the way, I've had someone who has really taken a chance on me and believed in me, whether it be, I think of my former boss, Abby, who was my mentor through several campaigns that I worked on in Michigan and New York, in Georgia. And I think of my colleagues in Berkeley and my friend Cecilia, who's now my councilwoman. And even in my freshman year of college, she had asked me to support her campaign and to now serve on a commission here in the city of Berkeley. So it's always been about the people who've taken a chance on me. A lot of them are young people themselves.
And I'd love to talk with you and Sanvi a little later in the show about the myths around Gen Z, because what tends to get attention in the media is that you're all addicted to your phones, you're constantly scrolling, and it's mostly doom scrolling. So I'd love to get your thoughts about what we constantly hear in the media and what is actually happening based on your lived experiences. Sanvi, why don't you spend a little bit of time talking to us about how you became so active at the age of 15?
Yeah, I have a really similar story. I actually, when I was in high school or when I was younger, I really didn't have a lot of political inclinations. I was pretty apathetic to like just politics in general. I think there was an overwhelming sentiment in my community and even in my family, you know, being from an immigrant background, that politics was something that you'd only get involved in if your like goal was to end up as a career politician. And that's an interesting myth that we can break down later too, but it obviously created a lot of silos, at least for me, in terms of what I considered my interests. And then I think my sophomore year of high school, one of my friends, she was organizing this protest or this rally, that's more accurate, in San Jose related to Proposition 15, which was a 2020 ballot measure that would have provided around $7 billion, somewhere between $7 to $12 billion in funding for public schools in California by changing certain property tax loopholes. And the purpose of the rally was to help gather signatures to get the proposed measure on the ballot. And I was 15 years old and my friend was like, do you want to come hang out and make posters for this rally together? So I came with her and I helped her paint posters. It was just a fun time for us to hang out. And I met a bunch of other people and I decided, okay, why don't I just attend the rally? Like, I have a bunch of new friends that are going to this. And I went and it was genuinely such a transformative experience. We had hundreds of people come out for this. And this was before the pandemic. And it just taught me the power of organizing and to see all of my friends and people that I really cared about get so involved and find passion and an outlet for their ideas in this way, like really inspired me. So I just continued to stay involved in like education policy, continued to advocate for Prop 15 through the 2020 election. But that was my first exposure into policy work, into organizing and advocacy work. And when we got that measure on the ballot, when we got enough signatures, it felt like such a win because it was such a student-driven movement. And so, yeah, that was my first initial, I think, hop into this field and into this kind of work. Later in high school, I got more involved in state policy work also just by being in community. I had been volunteering for a crisis line in my community and lost a really close friend of mine to suicide when I was young. And so I noticed that when I was talking to my peers who were also staffing this peer crisis line about that, we noticed a lot of gaps in law. And one of my friends in that space had an idea to go to the state legislature to change law around school-based absences. And so I decided to follow them around and just see what could happen. And we passed that law in 2021, which was also another example to me of like the importance of trusting youth leadership and also trusting yourself to carry those ideas forward, regardless of your age or your identity.
I'm so sorry to hear about your friend. What we learn when we go to your website, youthpowerproject.org, is that 70% of young people report struggling with their mental health. And your site says, we ask the questions that lead to real solutions for young people to lead healthy lives. And I love how you put this on your site. Most youth do not know that they can talk to a lawmaker or walk into the state capitol, provide feedback to companies designing products for them, or that their lived experiences are exactly the expertise policymakers need. We create opportunities for youth to directly touch democracy, to see their experiences reflected in the law, and that can be life-changing. That is really powerful. Sanvi, what happens when you bring in young people to do this various work? Because you work on such a wide range of issues, from mental health to tech accountability to rights for students. What really stands out for you when you watch young people see that they actually do have power?
Yeah, it definitely speaks to like the overall misconception that young people are apathetic to their communities, that they're apathetic to government, or that they're apathetic to larger systems around them. Working with a lot of young people, and even just through my own journey, you know, you realize and recognize that a lot of those misconceptions are failing to point at the true problem, which is that young people are distrusting of government, and they're also disillusioned by democratic pathways, or by democracy as a pathway to effect change. And oftentimes this distrust comes from receiving systems or receiving just misaligned policy and being subject to policy that doesn't actually support your well-being. So have found that just by increasing agency, by purely trusting lived experience and creating opportunities for young people to tangibly, in a non-tokenizing way, impact the world around them, one, it creates a lot of trust. It helps create more trust in solutions, in policy solutions, and also in other community-based solutions. But two, it also reinforces a sense of leadership and a sense of power that is so essential right now, especially for combating burnout, for combating disillusionment. So I think those are the two main things that we notice. And also the other thing that we notice is that it's really important for your confidence, to know that you can trust your own lived experience, that your voice matters, and that your ideas are valuable. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is so, so important, so transformative. I know it's played a big role in who I am today, and the skills, and even just like the risk you're willing to take on yourself to get involved in advocacy work, because so much of it is about showing up for others and showing up for yourself.
Sanvi Arora is founder and executive director of the Youth Power Project. They empower young people to turn their experiences into actionable solutions through storytelling, education. Since starting this work at 15, Sanvi has helped to pass over a dozen state and federal laws on mental health, education, tech accountability, and student rights. Sanvi Arora is an undergrad at UC Berkeley, completing bachelor degrees in computer science and legal studies with a minor in public policy. Ren Zaro Fitzgerald is a 21-year-old community advocate organizing since they were 15. Ren has led winning local, state, and federal campaigns across the country and mentored aspiring young advocates. Ren has done very incredible social media and outreach work with a number of groups, including BART, Gen Z for Change, Berkeley's Transportation Commission, More Perfect Union, which is such an incredible organization, and their social media, I think, is probably almost better than most out there. So these two people that we're having on today, our two guests, have done really incredible work, and they're going to be taking part in KALW's Youth Empowerment Summit called Power the Future, January 31st. Doors open at 11 a.m. Bay Area youth are welcome. It is free and open to any young person who registers online. Find information at kalw.org. Click news. And if you have any questions for Ren or Sanvi, they're going to be with us for about 10 more minutes. If you'd like to find out what it's like to be a young person today, with so much happening so quickly under this Trump regime, with social media, and just if you have any questions for them about what it is like, and then also, what do you hear in the media about young people today? What is really prominent? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Ren, how do you think we should be talking about young people today? Because there's so much there. There's a lot of stories about phone addiction and social media. And there are a lot of very valid concerns, especially with young people talking with AI chatbots. I was just talking with my brother about that because I have a 15-year-old niece. And I said, you know, are you making sure that she's not talking with a chatbot? And it's just so strange to have to say that today, but that's very valid. But as Sanvi said, we also hear that young people are apathetic. And I think some of that comes from the fact that I was just looking up youth voter turnout in the presidential election, and about 47% of young people 18 to 29 cast a ballot in the 2024 presidential election. So I'm just curious what your thoughts are. There's a lot there. There's many layers to it. But what do you think the media gets right and what do they get wrong?
Absolutely. And I think that's such a good question, Rose. You know, ultimately, Gen Z is not any different than any other generation. Everyone grows up, they make some bad choices, they make some good choices, and the majority of people turn out all right. What's different about our generation is, like you mentioned, the unprecedented level of technology that is not only being presented to us, but really forced upon us. I have classes, or I know of classes at UC Berkeley where AI use is required despite a lot of protests against the environmental and psychological impacts of it. And obviously, we've seen a number of Sanvi and I's peers have been lost to suicide as a result of the use of AI and all of the harmful technologies, particularly with social media. So for me, it's not about telling Gen Z that they are doing something wrong or doing anything differently than any other generation, but about removing those harmful and regulating really those harmful technologies that have been presented to us. Technology can be such a tool for change. I really believe in the power of social media to enact change within our communities. It can be a really great drive for social change. And at the same time, a lot of people are using it in a way that is harmful and ultimately profiting off of the struggles that it brings us. So at the end of the day, Gen Z is not any different than any other generation. We are searching for community. We are searching for people who share our values and who we can spend time with and form our formative memories with and spend the most important years of our life with. And while other generations, particularly seniors, are facing a absolute crisis of a loneliness epidemic, we've found a solution in social media. So it's not about taking away the good resources or demonizing Gen Z for finding a solution to isolation within the US, but to take away the technologies that have been used for bad and have been used to harm us.
What about the idea around youth engagement? What do you think about what we hear in the media that young people are apathetic because of the low voter turnout rate? But we should say this is across the country. It's not just young people. Half the country doesn't vote, and that includes half of young adults.
Absolutely. Well, I look at it from a working class perspective. Gen Z is one of the poorest generations in, certainly in this lifetime, in many generations. We tend to be lower income. We have higher unemployment rates. We are often forced to be caretakers for members of our family. And it's not that we necessarily don't care, but we have other priorities. Voting only happens when it makes sense in someone's schedule. Voting only happens when people can value that up against the other things that they have to do and say that this is worth my time right now. So if you have people who are working multiple jobs while going to school, while dealing with student debt, while trying to survive under today's political atmosphere, they're not going to see going to the ballot box as a worthwhile use of their time. So for me, it's not about even convincing people that voting is important. Gen Z knows that. There's been really wonderful outreach about how important voting is, and I hope that that continues. But for me, it's about alleviating all of the difficulties that come with getting to the ballot box or really doing any sort of advocacy or social change. If we want people to become advocates, if we want Gen Z to do good in the world, we need to make sure that their basic needs are taken care of first.
What would you like to add, Sanvi?
Yeah, I agree a lot with what Ren was saying. I also think that, as you mentioned, a lot of the voter turnout statistics recently have put Gen Z at par with the behavior across other generations. But unfortunately, the narrative that's pushed upon our generation in the media is that it's our burden to take care of a lot of social and political issues, or that we should be able to shoulder as a generation higher social and economic barriers than other generations, which ultimately, with that framing in mind, would point to Gen Z being lackluster in showing up. But as Ren said, I do think that a lot of the issues related to engagement come from a misunderstanding of how privilege intersects with the idea of voting, and that there are a lot of young people and a lot of members of our generation that are showing up civically in ways that are quote unquote non-traditional, whether that be in the policy realm, but especially through mutual aid and community organizing efforts. I think that you'll find that young people are paying attention to the world around them. They are civically engaged, and that this measure of apathy through the idea of voter turnout is inaccurate, just because we know that the sentiment isn't that young people don't care. It's that they don't believe in certain avenues, such as the ballot box, as a way to affect the change that they need to see in their immediate lives, and therefore not worth the sacrifice, especially if their basic needs aren't being met. So I think that I agree with what Ren says and or Ren said about that. I also do want to say, kind of tying back to your previous question around social media and AI, that that this narrative kind of carries through in that realm as well, where a lot of the reforms or the sounding of the alarms related to AI and technology still place a narrative that is focused on users being able to better navigate and fit technology into their lives versus putting that onus on the technology companies and platforms to create sound products. And I think that that is obviously incorrect and it is a failure in the way that we talk about this crisis. I've heard a lot about screen time limits or this whole movement around phone-free schools. And in my opinion, I think all that does is really reinforce the narrative that it's our problem as people and as communities to deal with the ubiquitousness of technology that's unregulated versus, again, making sure that there's a convergence between communities and users and those companies themselves to create responsible technology.
And we're definitely going to continue doing shows about this. You posted on your LinkedIn page about a documentary that sounds fantastic, Can't Look Away, The Case Against Social Media. And we're definitely going to be doing a show about that in the future. We have a couple minutes left, and I have to ask you both what it's like to do this work under the Trump regime. There's just so much happening. It's like whiplash, and it's difficult. I was just listening to a story this morning on NPR about how young children, we're talking toddlers, are afraid of ice in the Twin Cities. They don't want to leave the house. And it's just heartbreaking. And it's really difficult to watch these ice raids on a regular basis. We've seen what's happened in Gaza on our screens in real time. And we just have access to so much visual stories that we haven't had in the past. And so, Ren, I just wonder, what is this time like for you to be doing this really important work under this administration?
Yeah, Rose, I think you captured it perfectly. It's difficult for everyone to watch right now. It certainly should be difficult for everyone to watch right now and to experience. And being young people, it's, at the end of the day, it's young people who are some of the most impacted by what's happening in America and in the world right now. I think of the students who are my age who can't go to school because their schools were bombed and absolutely destroyed in Gaza. I think of that every time I wake up and dread going to class and how lucky I am that my classroom has not been reduced to rubble. I think of 5-year-old Liam, who yesterday was kidnapped by ICE agents in Minnesota and used as bait to allow the agents to kidnap the rest of his family. And so to be this close in age and in perspective to the people who are most impacted by what's happening in America and worldwide, it's a very sobering feeling. It's very grounding. And more than anything, it can certainly be unmotivating, and it can make us want to retreat because it's just so difficult. And those are problems that I know I can't handle on my own. And at the same time, what I hope to do and what I hope to empower other young people to do, and what I know Sanvi is doing very well, is to turn that rage and that disheartening feeling into action. Right now, young people are growing increasingly aware that our biggest impacts happen at the local level. Like I said earlier, if we are able to get food on the table for people, if we are able to take care of their basic needs, then they can become advocates in their own rights. So my job and the job of so many youth advocates is to fight at our local level, is to make sure that groceries are affordable, is to make sure that childcare is affordable. I look to Zohran Mamdani, the mayor of New York, who just rolled out a free childcare program in 14 days, and how much that is going to free up time for adults to become advocates and for young people to become advocates. So it's right now, it's about organizing at the local level. It's about using our perspective as young people to really connect ourselves to these broader social movements and to these broader crises. And also, more than anything, because we're young, I still get called kiddo in my comments. I still get told that I don't know anything or that I'm a child. But really, I think that the only perspective I'm lacking is a perspective of not being able to do anything. And the immobility of our federal representatives and the immobility of our parties to really serve working class people goes far beyond my lifetime. And so I'm coming at it from a fresh perspective. I have not yet been convinced that nothing can happen. And the only limit to what I believe is possible is really, not to sound too cheesy, but my imagination. And I really do believe that coming at it from a young person's perspective means you're coming at it from a person's perspective who hasn't yet given up and is still ready to fight.
Mm. That is so powerful and so not cheesy, Ren. Thank you for sharing that. We should say that 78% of young voters supported Mayor Mamdani, and we're going to be doing a show about his victory next Thursday. Sanvi, what would you like to add in your final thoughts?
Yeah, I'd just like to say that I think that the benefits of social media are that you're able to educate yourself on issues facing not just your community, but communities globally, and also educate yourself and bear witness to those atrocities or victories in real time. And unfortunately, what that's also created is kind of an overstimulation and honestly a desensitization to trauma. I think unfortunately a lot of young people, or people in general who are online a lot and who are seeing what's going on with ICE, who are seeing what has been going on in Gaza and what is now happening. What's just going on globally. I think it's created a level of normalization of this idea of struggling, and also that coupled with threats to the idea to assemble, threats to the right to assemble, threats to the right to free speech, have created almost a paralysis in our communities around what to do and how to act and how to organize. So I think now more than ever, we need to work to preserve those spaces and to preserve and continue to build skills amongst our community members on how to advocate for yourself, how to fight back against oppressive tactics. And I have a lot of faith in partners and people that I've gotten to work with through, like, who are my peers, who are older, who are younger, that are like really leading the charge in their individual communities in that respect. So I'm excited, but also obviously saddened by what's been going on. But I'm excited to see how communities will adapt and create new creative strategies to move forward.
Sanvi Arora is founder and executive director of the Youth Power Project. They empower young people to turn their lived experiences into solutions through storytelling, education, and youth-led policy design. Sanvi is an undergrad at UC Berkeley, completing bachelor degrees in computer science and legal studies with a minor in public policy. Ren Zaro Fitzgerald has led winning local, state, and federal campaigns across the U.S. and mentored young advocates. Ren has done social media and outreach work with BART, Gen Z for Change, Berkeley's Transportation Commission, More Perfect Union, and other organizations. Ren and Sanvi both got involved doing this work at age 15, and they will be involved at KALW's Youth Empowerment Summit, Power the Future, on January 31st. Doors open at 11 a.m. It is free and open to any young person who registers online. Find more information, kalw.org. Ren and Sanvi, thank you so much for your incredible work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to seeing everyone next week.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Coming up after a break, we will talk about Dance Mission's new performance, Match Girl, which explores the fractured fairy tale of the American dream. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. We'll be back after this.